FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth. Hey, everybody. Today is the day. Today is the day that we're going to be wrapping up our look into Javier and Jacob and Austin and that entire group of friends. As I mentioned on the follow-up this week, this is not the last we're going to look into this. But as far as this first phase, this information gathering phase, I think that we've explored to the ends of the earth with this group. We've heard every interview, everybody that was connected to them, their interviews from 2006, 2007, up to 2015. And that's all information we have now gathered, we're going to hang on to, and then we'll be circling back to that stuff later when we get to the phase where we start to develop hypotheses and theories and things like that. We've got a lot of other ground to cover, as I've mentioned in this week's follow-up. We need to get through some of the random people that aren't necessarily suspects, like Becky's sisters and follow-ups with her friends. And then I want to take a look at Josh Arney, who was the person that she spoke to on her way up the hill the night that Becky was killed. Before we do that, the final wrap-up for this one. This episode, I'm going to tell you up front, it's not packed full of information. It's kind of buttoning up loose ends. But we do get a couple of decent different perspectives here. So, without further ado, this is Season 12, Episode 26, Family Ties.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, in this week's episode, like I said in the intro, it's not packed full of a ton of information, and I've tried to organize it in a way that most of the information-heavy stuff is going to be up here up front in the beginning. And for those of you that don't like to listen to a whole lot of interviews, the last one you could definitely skip if you don't want to. That one really is out there because it's just part of the file. It's interesting. There is, I mean, literally nothing useful for the case. For this interview, you're not gonna miss any deep analysis by not listening to that final interview, which I'll explain here in a second. So the three interviews you're gonna hear today, and I'll break them down briefly here before we get into them, is first is the probably the most in-depth and informative interview is an interview done with Bonnie Garcia. That's Javier's mother. It was recorded on October 5th of 2006, so just about 2.5 weeks or so after the murders. And in this interview, what you're going to hear, actually, is Detective LeClaire calling Bonnie back because she called him not happy because one of her neighbors told her that she saw the police poking around their house. We hear from LeClaire during this interview that he was there because he was looking for Javier. He wanted to talk to him about a polygraph test and to explain to you kind of what goes on in this interview, like I did in last week's interview with Austin Alba. Bonnie talks about the polygraph. She says that her ex-husband, Javier's dad, didn't want him to take a polygraph. She also says that she agrees with that. And she says because they're not admissible, they might be a good investigative tool, but she doesn't want him to take one. They're not admissible in court and they can't be used to clear him, which, you know, I agree with all that. So from there, LeClaire decides to just conduct an interview and start asking Bonnie some questions while he has her on the phone. So I want to give you kind of the bullet points that she went over there. She does confirm a few things for us, or at least add to the knowledge base that we already have. One of the first things she says is that Javi had a crush on Becky. And we find out later in the interview that Javi didn't tell her that he had a crush on Becky. She kind of assumed that. And then she actually says she heard that from Becky herself. So it sounds like there was a conversation between Bonnie and Becky. Bonnie says that she was not happy with Becky always hanging around their house. She said that there was a bunch of guys there all the time, a bunch of boys, And then Becky would be there too. And she would spend the night with Javier, with the guys. And I wrote down a quote that she says in the interview. If you're not my son's girlfriend, you shouldn't be spending all this time at my house. So that's what she says that she said to Becky during this conversation. But another thing that we get out of the conversation is the whole idea, several people have been asking, is there any weight to this rumor or this thing that Robert had said about Becky dating a Marine? Well, Bonnie told the police, she tells LeClaire in this interview, that Becky was in fact dating a Marine at some point. She says that Becky talked to her about that. She got that information from Becky herself that she dated a Marine for, she says, a while. So there seems to be some weight behind the idea that she dated a Marine. Bonnie goes on to say that when talking about asking Becky about this crush that Javier has on her, she said that Becky says it's not like that. They're just friends. But she says that Becky told her that she's sure that Javier would like it to be more than that, but she's not interested in him in that way. So that's, you know, I don't know. That's not really here nor there, but it's just more information. This is the first time that we've heard, you know, we've heard a lot of people saying what they think the relationship was like between Becky and Javier. And we've certainly spent a lot of time speculating about how Becky might have felt about that relationship. And here, you know, if we believe Bonnie Garcia, and I don't see why we wouldn't, she says she heard those words from Becky. So that's how Becky saw the relationship, that she thought they were very good friends. She seems to know that Javier would like them to be more than friends, but she was never interested in being more than friends with him. Then we move on to probably the most informative part of the interview, and that's where Bonnie breaks down Javier's timeline on the day of the murders from her perspective. So she says that Becky spent the night at her house Saturday night. She wasn't home. She was out of town. She was in Las Vegas, I believe. She says that on Saturday when she got home, which I think was around noon, she called Javi and needed Javi to go pick her up at the airport. So Javi went to the airport, and as we know, that's when Becky then went over to Claire's house. So Javi picks his mom up at the airport. They go home, and they get one of the, I don't know which car he took to pick her up at the airport, but then together they get Javi's car and Bonnie's car, and they drive to Walmart, and they drop Javier's car off to get new tires put on it. So then now they're both in one car. Javier then drives back to the house, drops Bonnie off back at home. And then Javier leaves from there, she says, to go have lunch with Becky and her friends, which all adds up with the idea that we heard before from I think, Javier and Janelle and Claire, that somewhere around the 3 o'clock hour, Javier meets them at Target and they hang out for a little bit. Then she says a few hours later or some time later, that she calls Javier and she has to go to City Hall for some sort of event that night. He has her car. So he has Javier leave, drive back and pick her up. Her being Bonnie picks her up. And she says that's when she thinks that Becky then went up the hill. So Becky went up the hill. Javier goes and picks up his mom. Then they drive to Walmart so he can get his car. She says that when they got there, the car wasn't ready. They weren't done with the tires yet. So she left Javier alone at Walmart while she went on to City Hall. And she says that she thinks that was around 5:30 or 6, which that sort of tracks with, you know, we know that Javier was still down in the valley at about that time. As far as what Javier was doing that night, so she doesn't know, but from what he told her, that he was driving around hanging out with his friends that night. So that's all she knows about that. The next morning is interesting. So this would be the Monday morning, the day that Javier finds out about the fire and the murders. She says that she actually woke Javier up to get him out of bed because he had class that morning, and that he got up. And then she says that he was calling around to friends of Becky's because he hadn't heard from her and wanted to know if they had heard from her. And then at some point during that morning, one of his friends who lives up the hill told him that there had been a fire. And then that's when he headed up the hill. So that was how things went. And again, you'll hear in the next, you know, 30 seconds from now, you're going to hear Bonnie herself do this interview if you listen to it, and you'll hear her words as she explains all of this. Oh, also, she does mention in that interview that Becky had broken up with Jacob, her nephew. So that's just further confirmation. But again, that could have come from Javier, too. But that's just another person saying that that breakup did occur a few days before the murders. So that's going to be the first interview. It's Bonnie Garcia. Then we'll have a short break. And then we're going to come back and there's going to be another very short interview. It's only 4 or 5 minutes, I think. And that is with Emmalinda McGinnis, Jacob Santiago's mother. She was interviewed in 2015. And this is when the police were trying to get a hold of Jacob and they were not having any luck. We kind of got that vibe from the interview with Austin when they mentioned it. So they go talk to Jacob's mother. Short interview. She doesn't seem to be particularly thrilled with that. And she basically says that Jacob's not going to talk to them unless he gets subpoenaed. And then she mentions that, which is just something to store away when we go to post-offense behavior. She says that he had a complete psychological breakdown after Becky was murdered. She mentions a psychiatrist. There is no diagnosis given or anything like that. I would have redacted if she gave it, but she doesn't explain what happened there. But he had a really rough time afterwards. But we also find out that a year after Becky died, that Jacob, it sounds like he discovered the body of his aunt who had passed away. And it sounds like those two things together really tore Jacob up. And he had a really hard time after that. And so his mother says that, you know, she doesn't want to. I think the way she puts it is, I'm not about to give him PTSD over all this again. He's not going to talk to you unless you have a subpoena to get him to talk to you. And that's the extent, really, of that interview. It goes on for a few minutes. There's a little bit more there. I think it's worth a listen. It's short. And that is the second interview. After that interview, really, unless you just really like listening to these interviews and you really want to get a good feel for everything and everyone, the final interview is a long one. It's about 40 minutes long. And it is with Rolando Santiago. That's Jacob's twin brother. Rolando is the one who lived in Costa Mesa, where Jacob was the night before the murders. This interview is conducted, again, in 2015. The only thing really of note in that interview is it really struck me to hear the officers tell Rolando that the only reason that they were doing this interview and they were looking for Jacob is basically to check off boxes before they try to recharge Robert and Christian and take them to trial. I mean, he says that the purpose of the interviews is they don't want the defense to be able to say that they didn't clear someone or didn't follow down these leads. So they're checking off boxes. I don't know if that's what they're really doing, but that's what he at least says that they're doing. But Rolando's a super interesting guy. I mean, it's just really interesting. It's an interesting interview to listen to, but there's nothing. He doesn't remember dates and times and exactly when he heard what from who. He's got a basic grasp of how Javier was doing afterwards, how Jacob was doing after the murders, and the relationship between Becky and both of them. But there's nothing really substantial there. It's a long interview. I thought about just not playing it at all, but I think it's worth, for those of you that just want it all, keep listening. Like I said, it's interesting. You're not going to get a lot out of it case-wise. But it's there, you can listen to it, and then we can put a button on this group for now, and we can move past them, which I know myself and a lot of you are ready to do, to move on to another group and start looking at things from a different angle. Because I think one of the tricky things with doing a case like this is we want to see everything from every perspective. We want to stay unbiased. We want to stay neutral. And if we keep staring at the same group forever, the longer you do it, the more things you find that maybe make them look guilty because they're the only people you're looking at. So I think it's a good time for us to put a button on them and then move on after that to a few other loose ends that we need to tie up. And then we're going to get deep into the case against Robert and Christian after that, which I know a lot of you are excited to do and have been waiting for. So with that being said, after a quick break, you'll hear the October 5th, 2006 interview with Javier's mother, Bonnie Garcia.
Answer phone call to Bonnie Garcia. Returning her phone call.
Hello.
Hi, is this Bonnie?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Bonnie. It's Detective LeClaire with the Sheriff's Department.
Hi.
How you doing?
Very good. Were you over at my house today?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, where did you leave your card?
There's no reason to. I just went over there to try to see if Javi was there.
Okay, well, did you find him?
Yeah, I swung by his work and was hoping he was working there, and he was, so talked to him there for a couple of minutes, and that was that.
Okay. So is there anything that I can help you with? Or, you know, I'm a little worried about this investigation. You guys are not releasing too much information.
Yeah. That's pretty standard in this type of case.
Yeah, I imagine it is.
What I'm trying to do is get as much information from everyone as possible so I can kind of, you know, kind of get a history on who's who and try to find out who's responsible.
Yeah.
One of the main things I'm trying to do is, you know, eliminate all the close people in her circle so I could, you know, go for it, obviously.
Right.
One easy way to eliminate people is to have them take a polygraph test. So I was trying to get Javi to see if he wanted to do that so I can kind of eliminate him from the circle.
Yeah, well, I understand it. He's been counseled not to do that.
Oh, really?
Because A, it's not something that's admissible, and B, it's not scientifically driven, so I think you can, you know.
So you're not a proponent of it, huh?
No, I'm not.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because
yeah.
I think it's a good investigative tool maybe for you guys, but it's not something that is admissible in court, so what's the point? But I'm actually frankly surprised that you guys haven't come to talk to me.
Okay. Yeah. So, you had any information?
Well, I don't know. You said you're eliminating people that were close to this girl.
Okay.
So if you want to come and talk to me, that's why I was surprised that you didn't leave a card at my door. I was wondering, that's a little bit unusual, a little bit, I don't want to say unprofessional, but my neighbor saw you there, and there were two of you there, so, you know, of course someone knows you came to my door, and just in my line of work, a policeman shows up at my door, everybody wants to know what the hell's going on. So that's why I'm calling you.
Okay. No problem with that. I mean, if your neighbor wants to, you know, be on a lookout, I mean, what are you getting at? I don't go around leaving my card at everyone's door if there's not a reason for them to call me back.
Well, that's why I didn't know who you came to talk to.
Oh, okay.
You came to talk to me or whether you came to talk to my son. I know you've already talked to my son.
Okay.
So the reason I'm calling you is... Is there any reason for you to talk to me? Do you think there is? If you're eliminating the circle of people that may know this girl, maybe you think you need to. And if you do, well, then I want to make myself available to you.
Okay, well, let's talk right now.
Okay.
Since we're on the phone. What can you tell me about these people?
I don't know the parents, but this young lady spent a lot of time at my house.
Okay. Tell me about Becky.
What do you want to know?
No, everything you know about her. Tell me what type of person she is.
I would say pretty easygoing kind of girl. Had a wide circle of friends, many that I don't know. I know the circle of friends that she hung out with at my house. You know, five or six guys, which I think you've already talked to.
Okay.
And she spent quite a lot of time at my house.
Who are those guys? So I can ensure those are people I have spoken with.
I know them a lot by nicknames and just guys that hung out with my son. Corey, whose dad works for Palm Springs PD,
okay.
Our same guy, Spikey Hera. Alex, short kind of buzz hair. Bo, the red hair kid. My son. My nephew, Jacob. And, you know, she seemed to be the only girl in the circle.
Okay.
So, she was the kind of girl that hung out with guys that were easy to hang out with. That's how I would describe her.
Did she have a boyfriend?
Yeah, she did. She was dating my nephew for a while, and I know that my son had a crush on her for a while. So, who she dated, I think she dated some guy that was, I want to say a Marine or, you know, some military guy for a while.
How long ago was that?
I don't really know. Maybe a couple months ago.
Now, how did you get this information? From Becky or from someone else?
Oh, from Becky, yeah. Talking to Becky.
Okay.
I don't know her circle of friends. She lived here in the area and then left and then moved back to the area and then started hanging around with my son and a couple of his friends, you know, several months back.
When she dated this military guy, was that before she moved away, or after?
I don't know if it was after she was back here or before, you know, she was here.
Okay.
I never asked her where the guy was from or anything like that. And, you know, she dated quite a bit, so I didn't ask for a whole bunch of stuff. But she spent a lot of time in my house, and frankly, I was concerned. I just kind of have the kind of house where I tell my kids, bring your friends here. I don't want you in somebody else's house. And so I'm not the kind of parent that buys them alcohol or lets them, you know, smoke marijuana or do any of that crap. But I will buy them pizza and let them swim in my pool and watch my big screen TV and crash on my couch.
Oh, okay.
So she was spending a lot of time with that circle of guys. And so, you know, many a night she spent nights in my house. And I know she spent nights at my house even when I was out of town or working out of town.
Okay.
And so I said to her one day, you know, what's the story? Why are you spending so much time at my house? You know, if you're not my son's girlfriend, I think it's probably inappropriate for you to spend a lot of time here. And, you know.
What was her reply to that?
I'm sorry?
What was her reply to that?
She was just so, you know, we're just hanging out. I go, I know, but you live up the hill. And so I know that you have a long drive home, but I don't really think it's cool for one girl to be hanging out with so many guys. And even if there's nothing going on and I'm here in the house and sleeping in the house at the same time you're here, I think it just kind of looks bad.
Okay.
So she spent a lot of time at my house while I was there. I would come home some nights and the kids would be hanging out. I have a little fire pit in my backyard. Be hanging around the fire pit and just hanging out. I know she spent the night before this horrible incident at my house. And so that made me feel bad.
Did Becky and Javi ever date in the past?
Not to my knowledge, no. I'm sure he would have liked to, but she was dating his cousin.
Okay. So how do you know he had a crush on her?
Because she told me, and it was obvious, you know, when a guy is likes a girl.
Okay.
But it was obvious that, you know, all the time that she was at my house and hanging out with the guys, that she was just one of the guys.
Right.
I've never seen them holding hands or, you know, sitting on his lap or kissing his face. And in fact, they were just almost like 12-year-old silly with, you know, if one of the guys would fall asleep, they would, like, take magic markers and magic marker their face or their hands or do fake tattoos on them, that kind of stupid stuff.
Did Javi ever tell you that he was interested in dating Becky?
No.
Okay.
I'm sure there were 50 guys interested in dating Becky. She was cute, she was funny, she was funky.
She ever talked to you about any problems she was having?
She said she didn't get along with her, I think, one sister she didn't talk to that lived out of the area. I think she had a sister that she got along with that was in the military. Her dad, I knew, lived out of town, former deputy. She got along well with her mom. Never really talked to me about her stepdad. I don't know him. I don't know the mom either.
Do you know any of Javi's friends who drive a pickup truck?
What color?
Either blue, green, red, or somewhere around there?
No, the only pickup truck that any of them have, I think, was Corey's. And Corey's, I want to tell you, is yellow. Yellow, kind of like a beige color.
Okay.
And it has a dent in it because I backed my car into it.
Okay.
old pickup truck.
Okay. And do you remember the time frame where Becky said that Javi had a crush on him?
Do I remember the time frame?
Yeah, like recent. Yeah.
I don't think her discussion with me was that he had a crush on her. It wasn't a discussion like that. It was, hey, you're spending an awful lot of time in this house, and this is not cool. And she was just more like, hey, we're friends, you know. I'm sure he would like me to be a girlfriend, but I'm not interested in that. It wasn't like, hey, Javi has a crush on me, I'm leading him on. It was nothing like that.
Oh, okay.
But Becky's personality was very flirty, funky. I mean, you would go with her to the grocery store, she would be flirting with five people. You know, she was just kind of that funky personality. So I didn't kind of see it unusual. I just thought, you know, I'm the kind of Latina mom, you want to go screw around, go find a hotel room. And that's obviously not the case. In this case, well, then don't let it appear that way. And even when she spent the night at my house, my son has a king-size bed. And so it would not be unusual for four or five guys to be sleeping at my house, two on my couch, and two on his bed, and maybe one on his floor.
I see.
And then to have a girl hanging out, like, in the middle of that crowd, that's what I thought was not cool.
Okay. Anything else you think is important?
I just think, you know, timeline was important to me because that day I was in town, and I was in Vegas the night before, and my son picked me up at the airport, and we went to get some tires for his car, and the car got delayed with the tires being placed on it, and he dropped me off at home and went to have lunch with Becky and a friend. I think the friend was babysitting or something. And I had a 16th of September event in front of City Hall that night, and I called him and rushed him home because I had to get to work. And he came back to the house, and she left up the hill. And probably, I want to say it was probably around 5:30, 6 o'clock around that time. So I dropped him off at the shop to go pick up his car, and I went over to City Hall. So you know, she left to go back up the hill around that time. And as I recall it, in the morning, there was a fire that night. So I'm thinking, how much time between the time she left the valley floor to the time she got up there, the poor girl get in trouble?
When he came home, after Becky went back up to the hill, you said you called him and you said you summoned him. Did he actually come home?
Yeah, he was home that day because the next morning, I think I was going somewhere to go repair his car or something. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He had school, and I said to him, they have you registered at school incorrectly. They have you registered as if you live out of state, and you need to fix this tuition problem, and you need to go down to the counseling office. And it was early in the morning, probably around 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and he was like, I haven't heard from Becky. Becky worked nights at Denny. I haven't heard from Becky, and the guy up there told me that her house was on fire. And so we were looking at the news and saw all the commotion going on, and he was clearly concerned about her. And so that day, that morning, it was early in the morning, I want to say probably about 8, 9 o'clock, you know. We started seeing all the commotion going on and asking the friends if they heard from her, because I know the reception is poor up there. And then a few of them drove up there to see if they could see her car in the driveway to see if she was at home.
Okay. When you
I got him out of bed that morning.
Okay. When you summoned him home after he had lunch with Becky, how long was he home for?
Well, he was home probably about 10-15 minutes because I said, hey, you got to call me. You know, he had my car. He went to go get lunch with her, meet her and her friends, I want to say at Del Taco or something. And it was probably around 4:35 when I called him and said, hey, I got to get out there because I need to do this event this evening. And he came home, picked me up, and we went over to Walmart to go pick up his car. So I'm sure there's a time frame, a time stamp on that, on the receipt.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 tires put on his car.
And did he go with you to your event, or did he just go elsewhere?
No. I dropped him off at Walmart. They were not yet done with his car. So I left him at Walmart to wait for his car so that I can go to my event. My daughter totaled her car about 2 months ago, and so the only cars in my house are my car and Javi's car. And with his car in the shop, my car was transporting him, his sister, everybody else.
Did he tell you where he was at on Sunday night when this fire occurred?
Yes.
Where was that?
So he told me that he was out with his friends driving around.
Did he say if they were at a particular place?
Can you hold on 1 second?
Sure.
Yeah. I gotta go over to the television station. Would you call me after you're done here? Well, whatever one you find. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's right. Did he say if him and his friends went to a particular place?
To a particular place? No. As I understood it, the Becky had spent the night at my house, and my flight came in around noon that day, and their plan was to go hang out. So he and the guys go, one of the guys was up there in near Becky's house, and they go night hiking, and they go hang out in the woods, and I'm sure they go up there and, you know, party a little bit. And I guess the plan was to go up there for a little bit, and then Becky called them and said, no, don't come. There's another guy that she's going to see that's going to be up there. And Becky had recently broken it off with my nephew. And so there was somebody else that she was going to be hanging out with that night, and so she told my son not to go.
Okay. All right. Do you have a home number that I could contact you at? If
I don't have a home number. You could reach me always on my cell phone.
Okay, after when I just called?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you calling and providing some information.
And, listen, just do me a favor. If you come to my house,
okay,
leave me your card so I know who's coming to my house. Not that I'm trying to, you know, say that it's something unusual, but I'm in the middle of campaign season, and I've had my house destroyed. I've had people do damage to my house, so I really am really aware of who comes to my front door and call my neighbors.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, this next interview, as I mentioned in the introduction, is a short interview with Emma Linda McGinnis. This is Jacob Santiago's mother, and it was recorded in 2015.
Hi, sorry, we're catching you as you're heading out. Hi, I'm Detective Lester Harvest, my partner, Detective Ed Beza, and we're trying to actually see if we could get a hold of Jacob Santiago. I don't know if...
Are you the one that's been calling me at my job?
I don't know. I've been calling a 760 number. I haven't committed to memory. It doesn't have a voicemail. But you haven't got any voicemails from me, have you?
Have?
No, ma'am.
Let me see what number you're calling.
It's on my phone. Get it. Last four is...
What's the older number?
I'm sorry, ma'am?
What's all of the number?
That one doesn't ring a bell. Mm-hmm. That's the number I've been calling. No, ma'am. 3970.
There's an investigator calling me. I gave him my... I
no, ma'am. I have talked to nobody.
Okay, so what is this? regarding?
Well, we're from the Riverside County Sheriff's Department, and we're investigating the old Pinyon Pines murder back from 06. So I've been given the case, and I've been reviewing the case. And I actually read through all the reports, came upon the reports involving Jacob, who is, what's his relationship to you? I missed. I don't know if you told my partner.
No, I didn't.
Okay. What's your relationship to him?
I'm his mom.
Okay, perfect. Because I don't know who I'm giving information to, so, and I'll take you on your word. So anyway, in reviewing the reports with Jacob, I had a couple of questions that I needed to just clarify so we could go forward with this, so we can present it to the DA's office. So I'm just hoping that I can reach out to him, maybe make an appointment with him and talk to him.
Yeah.
He's not in trouble or anything like that.
I know that he isn't, but he was dating Becky, and after that he had a total mental breakdown. And the last investigator that came and wanted to talk to him, mm-hmm. he got a letter from his psychiatrist. And so unless he's subpoenaed to talk to somebody, he's not going to talk to anybody.
Okay. All right. I understand that part. I didn't see you had a little
one. Opened up a whole can of worms for him. That was his girlfriend.
Right.
And it was traumatic for him.
Sure.
This is after that happened?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's horrible.
It is.
That is.
Yeah. And he has a twin brother, right?
Yes, he does. Okay. Yeah. And so in the beginning he cooperated, he gave him their cell phone,
right.
And he has nothing to hide.
Right, absolutely.
All that kind of stuff, but okay, Natalia, no problem. But if you want to subpoena him and then he'll be there with an attorney or something, then so that you don't get all anxious or crazy or anything
okay.
like that.
Well, I have a question for you, ma'am, because I know it looks like you're getting ready to leave
yeah.
right now. Is it all right if I follow up and just give you a phone call and maybe talk a little bit more? Okay, perfect. And I'll give you my card. Yes, I'd really like to hear a little bit more, but I know you're... Okay. What is your name, ma'am?
Emelinda. E-M-E-L-I-N-D-A.
And
McGinnis,
M-C-G-I-N-N-I-S. Okay. And what's a good number that I can reach you at? If I call you tomorrow, if that's okay, what's a good time to reach you? What's the best time?
I'll give you my work number.
I'm sorry, ma'am?
I'll give you my work number.
Okay.
Myself.
Okay.
That number is...
No. Like I said, my partner and I work at the Sheriff's Department. No one should have reached out to you or son in some length of time. Because like I said, I've had...
Well, that was it was in the beginning, and then again, like, several years afterwards.
Okay. But not recent, like, not within the last 6 months
no,
or a year or anything like that.
Okay.
All right.
No, but a couple of years ago when they did, then I gave the investigators his psychiatrist number, and he could verify
okay.
his breakdown after that.
Has your son been diagnosed?
Yep.
What's his, if you don't mind, what's his diagnosis, ma'am?
That's private. I don't know that.
Well, I just, you know, I...
Let's just say you have a girlfriend that someone killed.
Absolutely.
And then a couple months later, you find your favorite aunt dead in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's enough to throw anybody over the deep end.
Well, certainly. Absolutely, ma'am.
So he's in recovery now. He's going to graduate from school. Things are looking up. I don't need to give him no PTSD.
I understand. Okay. Well, then I'll give you a call tomorrow and mm-hmm. we'll follow up. But thank
right.
you. Did you have anything else? Right?
No. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, as I said at the beginning, you've now heard from Javier's mom, you've heard from Jacob's mom. This final interview that's about 35 minutes long is with Jacob's twin brother, Rolando. It was conducted in 2015. If you're looking for really informative case materials, you're not going to get it from this interview. You're more than welcome to shut things off here. But if you want to hear it all, just keep on listening. It's a pretty interesting interview, not really about so much about the case. He's just an interesting guy. But here is the 2015 interview with Jacob Santiago's twin brother, Rolando Santiago.
I know you probably know a little bit about why we're here. I mean, hopefully you don't mind just chatting with us. It's okay with you? Tell me, if you don't mind, tell me why you think we're here, then I can fill you in on why we're here.
Man, it has to do with Becky. You know,
Did you know Becky?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was 9 or 10 years ago. I think, yes. You know, and my brother, it was my brother's girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
but that was... I was very sure they weren't together that long. You know, I do follow the news, and to be honest, I'm a little bit surprised that they had all the, I don't want to say evidence, but then just dismissed everything. So yeah. I'm kind of grateful that you guys are reopening the case for what it's worth.
Yeah.
So that's my assumption while you're here.
Yeah.
I don't like to make assumptions because you know what they say about that. I mean, yep. Ask that of you and me, but I don't want to assume, but I'll let you fill me in while you're here.
Yeah.
Is it Officer Dickey or I want to address your property?
Jim is fine.
Jim?
And Les.
Jim
or Lester, yeah. That's good. Yeah, you are correct on why we're here. I wasn't, nor my partner, working on the case necessarily when it went through the process of arrest and then dismissal. So, hi. So, here, you want a card?
I don't want the headband.
I should have brought you a sticker, huh?
Okay.
I should have brought you a sticker. I had some, too, in my locker. I should have brought you some. It's okay. It's okay. If she wants to climb on your lap, climb all over, no big deal. She'll be happier if you let her do whatever she wants to do.
You guys missed the meltdown earlier, man.
Oh, yeah. But yes, we weren't necessarily a integral part of the process when there was an arrest and then a release. But, you know, you had mentioned that you were surprised by that. Were you surprised because it's your belief that those were the right people that had committed this crime?
I don't even know, to be honest, I don't know those individuals at all.
Okay.
My cousin is Javier Garcia.
Yeah.
So
you're not directly familiar with them, or you don't personally know them.
Christian Smith, or Robert Paper. Yeah, I have no idea.
What is everybody saying about, what's the word on the street, or what's the word amongst everybody? Is everybody think that, yeah, those are the right guys, and we're just waiting for secrets to...
To be honest, I really have no idea. Okay. I really don't know anybody who knows Becky or was in contact with her.
Yeah.
I just remember, you know, last year, a couple of years ago,
yeah,
the court, and then I saw it on 48 hours. So that was pretty big and significant.
Yeah.
So for something like that, that's pretty close to home.
Yeah.
That, you know, pretty hits it hit home.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing little cell phone pings on 48 hours. I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I would think that'd be enough, and I'm not sure as to why.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys are investigating that, and I hope you guys find the answer. I mean, I just I feel terrible for the family.
Yeah.
You know, and my brother was happy. I think he was like 18 or 19 at the time. We were very young. This is 9 or 10 years ago, so this was in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
But I really have no idea. I don't know what people are saying. And it's very frustrating for the families, you know, and there's no closure.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part.
Well, we're trying our hardest right now, and I'll kind of fill you in on where we come into play. So because the case is 9 years old, it's been handed down from the original case investigators to some intermediary investigators and then to my partner and I. And so we are trying to check every unchecked box before the district attorney's office makes its final decision on this case. And that's where we're at right now. The most recent set of circumstances, there was a review of the case, and we looked at some things that probably would be a good idea to do now, so that way it wouldn't be something that in the middle of a trial we'd have to go, wait, stop, we didn't do X, Y, Z. One of those things was, as you probably know, is speaking with your brother again, and also getting his DNA swab, which I'm sure he shared with you, to eliminate him as a suspect. And it is not a thought of mine or my partner's or anybody in our office that your brother had anything to do with these murders. But there was a list of probably 5 or 6 people who we are traveling around California, Arizona, Nevada, getting these swabs from, so that way the defense, it's called pretrial prep, can't say, well, you never properly eliminated, Jacob Santiago, or you never properly eliminated so-and-so, or this. So as we're focused on who we think it is, the defense is going to be trying to point at all the things we didn't do. You know, well, you didn't do this, we didn't do that. So we're trying to just check every box that hasn't been checked, dot every I, cross every T. What leads us to you is that originally when we spoke with your brother, and I have his report here, back in 2006, when, not when we spoke with him, but the other investigators did, they took his statement. It's been a while. And as a part of his statement, he had mentioned that he may have spent some time with you prior to and during or after, around the time of the incident. And so what leads us to you is to help verify what he had told investigators back then. If you can, and I don't want you to guess. I want you to, you know, if you're unsure about something, just tell me you're unsure. Anything I ask you, if you don't know, just say, I don't know. Because it has been 9 years. And if you ask me what I did 9 years ago, now, granted, this is a very significant incident that somebody very close would probably have very vivid memories, you know, family members, you know, just like September 11th. Where were you when you got the news? You might remember some things. Yeah. But if it wasn't very close to you, you might not remember as much. But that's what leads us to you, is because originally your brother had mentioned your name and he gave a statement. And any person in the investigation that mentioned other people's names were going to those other people. And then, yeah, and then speaking with you, if you give us names of any other people, then we're going to go, you know. But we're not going to tell them that you mentioned their name. The only reason I'm telling you is because I know your brother and your mom already told you we spoke to him. It's no secret. But if any name came up in this of me and you speaking, I would run to them and say, you know, that you told me that they might have information.
And Rolando, I'm going to interject something.
Please.
It's my understanding, our understanding, that you have not ever been contacted by anybody from the Riverside County Sheriff's Department through the investigations bureau for a statement on your part. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
All
right.
And before we get into just a couple of quick questions, can you confirm the spelling of your first name for me?
It's R-O-L-A-N-D-O.
Okay. And I'm listening, but my partner's going to write it, so don't think I'm not writing it. It's not important. And Santiago, common spelling?
Yeah, S-A-N-T-I-A-G-O.
All right. And just to recap, your address?
99 California, of course. 92203 is the zip code.
Okay. And your cell phone number is?
76.
Perfect. All right. Did you have any work information that you wanted to provide us? Any alternative address or anything like that? Are you a student?
No, not any longer.
No? Okay. You're done with school?
I'm sorry.
You're done with school?
I don't know. I want to get my master's degree, but...
Did you get your bachelor's?
Yeah, I already got my bachelor's degree.
Yeah, what'd you get it in?
In business administration.
Cool. Is this recent, or you've had it for a while?
I've had it for, it's 5 years. It just, I guess being a student, you never see the light at the end of the tunnel, and when you finally graduate, like, oh my gosh, here it is.
Yeah.
Now the real world, that was 5 years ago. How quickly time flies by.
Has it paid off for you?
Absolutely. I now have my wife, you know, who I met in college, and also my daughter, so...
Yeah.
Everything happens for a reason. I'm just thinking, how am I going to squeeze in time to get my master's degree with the little one running around here and also working full time? So
it's
all about time management.
Try having two or three or four, and then you're lucky right now, just one, because you know what? She naps, right?
Not anymore.
Okay, never mind.
And then my mother, you know, she's, not to get off on a tangent, but she has her master's, and it's myself, my twin brother, of course, as you know. I also have a younger sister and then two stepbrothers.
There's some pressure there to...
You're telling me. So
yeah.
If she could do it, I could certainly do it. It's just a matter of putting the time and effort.
It is.
You know, so...
Yeah.
That's right here and right there.
Yeah. What do you do for work?
I work for Verizon.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
In your administration or installer or...
Not in sales.
Cool. You like it?
I love it.
Verizon cell phone or Verizon
Fios?
Oh, wireless, yeah.
Yeah, but I also... I don't want to both, so there's two facets of the company. So, predominantly wireless, but also on the Fios side as well, too.
Oh, cool.
Yes, Lester, great contact. I'll give you my information later on, so make sure you get all the discounts that you're entitled to. If you're generous, for sure.
It's good to know people. Good to know people. Now, if you only worked for Southern California Edison, you could really help us out. So, let me take you back to...
just confirm your date of birth.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry, I forgot that. Take you back to 2006. I know it's going back a ways.
I was in Orange County.
Can you independently recollect where you were living at the time when you heard that this had happened? You remember what day of week it was?
I remember the day of week.
If I told you it was Sunday, would that refresh your memory?
It would. I just remember Jacob was devastated.
Okay.
I know he was...
Were you living in Costa Mesa?
I was living in Costa Mesa. I was going to school out there.
Do you remember where in Costa Mesa you were living? Remember what street you were on?
Yeah. 3443 Meadowbrook Drive or Meadowbrook Lane, Costa Mesa, California, 92626 is the address.
You and yourself, roommate?
Roommates.
Okay, you and roommates. So it was a bachelor pad, kind of.
I wish. It was a great learning experience, to be honest with you.
Fraternity? No fraternity.
No fraternity, no.
Where'd you go?
I started off at College of the Desert.
Okay.
And I feel bad telling you this, but what a waste of time and money that was. Because when I got to Cal State Fullerton, mm-hmm. they told me that my credits and my classes did not transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I wasted a year out of my time, thousands of dollars of school or money, and great learning experience.
Yeah.
Went to Orange Coast Community College. Mm-hmm.
Thought you were going to say Saddleback, but Orange Coast is good, too. Yeah,
Saddleback is right there, and Irvine's a little bit further down, 405. Went to Orange Coast College for the general ed, just because I wanted to make sure that all my GE classes transferred to Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah.
And then I had moved to Fullerton in 2008 when I had met my wife.
Hmm.
Well, my wife at the time, but or now, excuse me.
Yeah.
So I was living with the students at the time.
So this day that this occurred back in 2006, it was on a Sunday. It was September 18th, as a matter of fact. That's not right to you?
17th.
Sorry, September 17th. The 18th was the next morning, so 17th was a Sunday, and the 18th was a Monday. Do you remember, if you do, you do, if you do, you don't, you do not. Do you remember your interactions with your brother, let's say, in the days leading up to those dates? So let's say, like, starting Wednesday or Thursday, the week prior.
He was really happy. He was,
was your relationship with him over the phone, or was it in person? Was he staying with you, or were you just talking on the phone?
He had his own place. And Becky would come over and hang out, and she was a great friend to my cousin Javier Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really them three hanging out, but I'm also the twin brother, so it's kind of like a 30-year marriage. Needless to say, I just remember him, and they were dating. Becky and Jacob were dating.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only I can't recall exactly how much time it was, but it was in its infancy. They were just starting a date. And I recall vividly, this was terrible of me saying this, but he wouldn't let me stay at the... Well, not, I shouldn't even say this because it's taking the statements. I'm sorry.
it's fine.
This is a funny story, but I don't want it to be documented. Probably throw him under the bus. He was just really happy.
Stop writing.
No. He was really, really happy.
Yeah.
And to the point where he didn't want to hang out with me. I had to make appointments to hang out with him.
Okay.
And that's the joke around it. So,
yeah.
For us to be twin brothers and always hanging out, he's like, hey, leave me alone. You know, I need some space. I'm hanging out with Becky. She's number one. Rightfully so. And she was really cool. She was really fun to be around.
Yeah.
She put a smile on everybody's face. That's why it was kind of shocking and surprising. But Jacob was really happy up until everything had happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know what your next question is, but I get kind of, I'm sorry, this is somebody's life, and it was so cruel and inhumane.
Yeah, this is a life-changing event for your brother and you.
Yes, and really for my brother, it's been a roller coaster ride for him, and I don't know if what he shared with you, but...
Really, nothing. We haven't... Unfortunately, there's a little bit of a barrier that we can't overcome between for communication.
It's been a huge impact on him. You know, it's he lost somebody who he really loved and cared for.
Yeah.
Later on, he lost our favorite aunt, you know, a year later. So it's just one thing after another, one loss after another.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been through a lot, to say the least. But for what it's worth, I remember after the fact when kind of finding out, he was saying, Orlando, this is, you know, Becky's going to answer her phone, and it's going right to voicemail. This is strange. And that was a red flag for him.
Do you remember what day that was he told you that?
It was, I want to say, even leading up to.
Was it the day it happened, you think?
I don't know. I can't recall the exact date, Jim. Okay. If it was leading up to that day. I just remember him vividly saying, you know, I'm calling her, I'm texting her.
Yeah.
And this is very, very strange and unlikely.
Okay.
That she's not responding, like, for her phone to be off, because she always has her phone on, you know, leave a voicemail.
Yeah.
Or if I send her a text message, she'll text me back. So
yeah,
for him to say that, it was somewhat of a red flag. And he was with me that weekend, so I'm like, oh, it's not a big deal, you know, what have you.
And this was before you guys found out what happened,
yes,
right?
Yeah. And then when everything happened, then it was just validated and solidified. It was the worst possible outcome. I mean, he didn't really, I don't know, I don't think he really, I don't think he would, I don't think anybody would think that was the outcome. It was very shocking and sad and alarming, to say the least. But it was, he was definitely shocked, and he knew when he was calling that something was definitely wrong. He had like that intuition,
yeah,
for what it's worth, just because it's not like her to have her phone off.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. We're all creatures of habit.
Yeah,
and,
so,
you know, your wife and my wife and his wife, they all come home at the same time usually every day, go to work at the same time usually every day. And so when we can't get a hold of somebody, we know.
Yeah, I know. Mine doesn't answer my phone calls. I'm like, great. I'm paying the Verizon bill over here, and she still doesn't answer the phone call. We do a voicemail, text her, call work, and then she finally returns my phone call. But it's nor here nor there.
We both appreciate, me and my partner appreciate the impact this had on everybody's lives. And, you know, I really wish that everybody could kind of understand where we were coming from. I think it would make things a lot easier. It would put people at ease. You know, we're not here to obviously get you in any type of trouble, or even your brother. Your brother's not in any trouble. Your brother's not going to be in any trouble. You did mention how much he has or hasn't shared with me, and there's been no sharing because there's a barrier, communication barrier, for you know, legal reasons, and you know, people, everybody has that right to not want to talk to law enforcement or to have a lawyer present, you know. But in his case, it's not needed, it's not necessary. I wish I could put him at ease to know that, and I have told him that. I just don't know how much he believes or doesn't. But really, just what I want to get back to is kind of making sure that I understand how that week went with your brother and you. You did mention that he was with you the week of, or the week prior. Can you just kind of tell me, if you remember, what you recall him, his comings and goings, being at your place in Costa Mesa? Do you remember the days or anything of that?
I had just started school, so I was probably 3 weeks, and so everything was very new and fresh.
Okay.
And so I was just, you know, letting him know about how costly it is and all the hot girls at school, things like that, which is very common. And it was nice for him to, I don't know if he was here in the desert or if he was living in San Diego in 2006, but it was nice for him to just getting out of the normal routine and coming to visit me. So,
yeah. Did he stay with you?
He did.
Okay.
And he stayed with me a couple of days. And
do you remember the days leading up to this, if he was staying with you, or the night that?
I can't recall, to be honest.
Understood. Completely understood.
You know, he was always hanging out with me because I just got a new place, so it was really nice. I just can't. I wish I knew more, or
yeah,
I wish I could remember more, but I.
When did you get that place? The place in Costa Mesa, do you remember?
Yeah, I do. It was in, let's see, 2003 graduated, 2006 moved out, let's see, June. It was either June or July. And then it was myself and, you know, roommates. I had to rent a room, and it was, you know, through Craigslist, but that's how I got a room in Costa Mesa, so to speak. And it was fine because I was a student. But yeah.
So you had a couple of roommates out of necessity, obviously, to help facilitate.
Oh, yeah, it was $2,000 a month for rent back then, and that was 9 years ago, so imagine present value. easily $3,000. It was near South Coast Plaza, you know, right next door.
Exactly, that's it, yeah.
So there's a total of how many roommates?
Myself and three others.
Mm-hmm. So, four of you guys piled in a one bedroom or two?
No, it was a beautiful townhome. Oh. So no complaints. It was nice. Also a great learning experience about people. And
people are pigs.
Not only that, but how unreliable they are.
Oh, yeah.
How deceitful they are.
They'll eat your food.
Not that, but how they can just leave you high and dry, and now you have to cover $2,000 of rent yourself. So yeah. Great learning experience for what it's worth.
No, yeah, you can't rely on other people sometimes.
No, not at all. But I would say, there's always a purpose, and everything falls into place when it has to. It was a dire situation, and I had new roommates when I moved to Fullerton. There were a bunch of lawyers, so it was a wonderful situation. So, great gentlemen, you know, great guys to have.
Yeah. Okay, well, you had mentioned that you don't recall if he had been out with you that week prior, and I understand. Is there anything else about the days leading up to, or that Sunday, or the days after, that you think that is information that we should have? That maybe we, I mean, if anything, if you can think of anything, please lay it on us, because, you know, maybe we did hear it somewhere else, or maybe it'd be the first time hearing it, but... Yeah, I know it's kind of tough because you're close enough to it that affected you, but you're not close enough to know a lot of these people's names that are involved.
I don't know the two. I don't know if they're suspects or the two people that were.
They are.
Okay, the two they suspects. Are suspects, yes. I don't have any idea who they are, or their relationship with Becky or with Jacob or with my cousin Javi.
Was your brother friends with them? Do you know?
No.
No, not so. Your brother was not friends with Robert. Pape or Christian Smith?
No.
Okay. Was, do you know if Javi was friends with them?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Do you still stay in contact with Javier?
Not really, to be honest. Right. That's pretty sad, but he lives in Nevada. Okay. So.
Just because he moved is the only reason? No big problem to you or anything?
No. Just because he moved. Life changes. Once you have kids, it's kind of tough. He's single and you know, he doesn't have any kids, so it's kind of hard to relate, but and he works a lot of hours as well, too, which I certainly respect.
He's an officer out there, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. He's like a correctional officer, so.
Yeah, kind of the same. Probably a little more dangerous, really. Especially in Nevada. Okay. Do you have some things?
We lived in Costa Mesa. It seems to me, based on what I've read, that your twin brother lived in. That's the notion that I'm getting about September-ish of 06. Did you ever go to his apartment?
I would go to his apartment, but it was very seldom, very rare.
Okay.
That's because I had already moved to Orange County and started school. But I would come home once a month and really stay at my mom's house in Cathedral City, and then stay at Jacob's house, you know, maybe for a night, or hang out there for the evening and then go back to my mother's house. But it would only be maybe like once a month when I come to visit the family. And it'd be, you know, my mother, also my late grandmother who had passed away, my great grandmother who's 99, lives in Florida. So that I certainly remember vividly, and that was 9 years ago. And up until 2010, I was doing that religiously every single month. I'd come out here to visit. But Jacob also moved. So he didn't always live in Palm Desert. You know, he lived in Palm Desert, then moved to San Diego, and, you know, to San Diego, and then back out here to the desert. So.
When your brother did live at the apartment condo, I'm not quite sure what the proper term is. Do you recall him ever having any roommates?
He had one roommate, and she was, Jim hit it right in the head, you know, slob pigs, you know, one of those roommates. She lived up in Santa Rosa, and she was only down, I think, for a month or two, and then she had left, and she moved back to Santa Rosa, where she was originally from.
Okay.
I don't remember her name. don't remember her last name. I just remember where she's from, where she lives.
Do you remember your brother having any other roommates?
No, it's only a two. It was a two-bedroom, two-bath apartment. Then he had another home. I didn't mention that, yes. He did have another roommate. I want to say his name is Austin.
Yeah. Now, would Austin have been come before or after the female?
It was after the female roommate. Yeah.
Okay. I'll show you a picture. Is that
that's Austin,
maybe your
dog? That's certainly Austin.
And you had an opportunity to meet Austin as well?
Yes.
What'd you think of Austin?
A bit quirky and nerdy. Very intelligent, very highly intelligent, an introvert, I would say. I don't want to put labels or be rude or insensitive, but he was somewhat quiet and, you know, loved computers. He had a couple different computers, very organized and neat, which myself and my brother loved because we were very organized and neat to a certain degree. And Jacob, I met him in school. He was one of his classmates at the time at COD. He was much more trustworthy than the prior roommate.
That's a good word, trustworthy. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe that leads into, I was going to ask you, what did you, you know, you kind of told me what you thought of him, but I mean, as far as how his coexistence with your brother, or even yourself with your interactions, how did Austin seem?
They seemed to be okay. They were, you know, very mutual and respective of each other's privacy and common areas. Things were paid on time, so it was really great. There's really no any issues. It seemed like it was really a great household, to be honest. There's really no like parties. It was really quiet for the most part. And that's the way that Jacob wanted to keep it that way. He didn't want to really draw a lot of attention and have management, you know, get kicked out or other neighbors complain. It was more of a smaller community. That's the reason why. And it was nice that Austin kind of respected that and had that common interest.
Based on the reports that my partner and I had reviewed, it appears to us, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that Austin was your brother's roommate when this horrific murder occurred.
Yes.
With Becky and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my partner's kind of mentioned it, but after this happened, after you guys found out about this and devastated your brother and just kind of shook the whole balance of, you know, what was happening in his life and in that apartment so much as well, too, how did Jacob and Austin and yourself, how did you guys all deal with this? I mean,
that's a wonderful question. That's a really, really great question. And I wish I had an answer for you. I know Jacob was just devastated. I mean, I can't put it into words. I was there for him as much as I could be. You know, and more so than Austin. We only knew each other a few months or a semester or maybe a year. I can't recall to be exact, Lester. I know that, you know, Austin lent sympathy and had empathy as well for Jacob and for the situation, but I really didn't. We really didn't discuss it amongst ourselves. It was so much turmoil that Jacob wanted to be somewhat by himself. And not in isolation, but more with my mom, more with my cousin, you know, my cousin Crystal, who's his favorite cousin, and also Mark, the OC, but I want to be more with family. And I never thought that Austin could be a person of interest, you know, positively, but I never really thought that. I know, and I appreciate you guys, you know, dotting your I's and crossing your T's. So when you showed me a picture, that hit it right on the head because now memory lane was coming back when you were saying that earlier. But I really can't recall like a conversation or a little powwow that we had in the living room together of how Jacob was feeling. I know he was crying a lot and he was really sad. But I really can't I don't really have a solid answer as far as how we interacted after the fact. I know it was very different. I know it was more in distress. And then that also... Austin got a job and moved out, and then Jacob moved as well. But even that, there was really no issues. They were still, you know, amicable and friends. So I hope that, for what it's worth, tries to help answer your question, but that's a great question. I just don't have the answer. I'm sorry.
You know, and I have to, what we have to do is obviously we got to do our homework. We got to read and we got to review. At the same time, there's got to be this humanistic inquisitiveness about us. And what makes Jacob tick? What makes Austin tick? What makes Rolando tick? What is it? What's going on in your guys' mind when you're thinking about this? You know, is it the anger part? Is it the accusatory part? I can't say that word.
Accusations.
Thank you.
Sure.
You know, what is it? So at some point, I just wonder, well, damn, Rolando, what do you think about this, man? You know?
Well, I think it's very heinous what was done. And the fact that it's been almost a decade and they can't find the perpetrators is, you know, very astonishing. It's unfathomable what they've done. I just hope there's justice and closure, you know, for the families. I know everybody's hurting. I know that you guys really, I don't know if this, if you guys know her personally, but it was very sad. And the magnitude of this was a nightmare. I wouldn't wish this upon my worst enemy. It's just so heinous. Just hearing the news and reading the paper, hearing that vividly when everything happened. I thought originally maybe it was like a fire that happened in the house, but knowing that, and this is just my own personal opinion and also what my brother had shared with me, that Becky's a fighter. She's always been a fighter. And his belief is that she was trying to get away, and that's the reason why the wheelbarrow. And it's very sad that her mother and her stepdad had gotten murdered in the house. And for her to be outside of the house, for me, kind of reaches some red flags and questions as to how this was done. And could somebody by themselves do it? As well as, is it premeditative? You know, what, like, as you said earlier, is it anger? Is it something? I don't know. But what I do know is lives are hurt from this. And we can't change the hands of time. I appreciate you guys being here. I really do. I know, I'll be honest. I'm not too keen on law enforcement, but I appreciate you guys listening. And I really like Luster. I mean, I love your questions and I love your openness. You know, you have a really great vibe, and you too, John.
This is a...
You taught me everything.
No. Everybody loves Luster. just want to give him a hug.
I appreciate you guys for what it's worth, trying to get this case solved.
Yeah. We are trying to do the right thing by the families. And unfortunately, in this line of work, when we come knocking, sometimes people think, you know, the worst. It definitely is hindering sometimes to just, because we could move on quickly, you know. And let me put it this way. If I ask, hey, can I talk to you? And you say, no, you want to talk to me. Yes, I respect that. But later down the road, somebody might look at that and go, well, why that guy didn't want to talk to them? What does he have to hide? When in reality, it's your right not to talk to us. So for people that aren't guilty of anything, it's always good to just talk, you know. Now, if you're guilty of something, that's a different story. But one thing I wanted to ask you is, in the report, I want to know if you knew anything about this or if you could provide us some insight. When your brother was interviewed back in 2006, he had told the investigator multiple times that that we really needed to talk to Javier Garcia, as he knew what went on, and he had an idea of what happened up there, and he is, quote, the key. And I was wondering if you had any insight into what that statement might mean from your personal maybe interactions with Javier before, during, or after this happened, but also maybe any information that your brother might have relayed to you about that. I mean, it's almost like, hey, I might know a little more, but you got to go talk to this person type of thing. Does that ring a bell for you at all?
I don't recall the key statement, what it's worth. I do recall Javier, my cousin, having a good relationship with Becky. They were like the best of friends.
Yeah.
And Javi had introduced Becky to Jacob.
Yeah.
And my interpretation, my perspective is, okay, well, Jacob doesn't have an idea because he was calling. Maybe Javi might have an idea of where she's at because that's her best friend.
Okay.
And he respected, you know, their friendship. He didn't infringe on it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, she's my girlfriend, leave me alone. It was more like that with me, but not with Javi.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that statement means or what it's referring to, or I don't really understand. But my interpretation is being that he's about...
Almost time for bath and bed. We, you know what? We have taken up plenty of your time. And you told me that you needed to get your daughter down.
It's fine. The wife is here, so I'm okay.
If the only other thing is, if something comes to our mind, and are we okay to give you a quick phone call? That's okay.
Yeah, most certainly. The only thing that I ask is, if I don't answer my phone, please send me a voicemail, because.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Kelly Barron's Brink and sound engineered by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design, and you can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, TruthAndJusticePod.com, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kay Woodyomnik, Ginger Fiola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. And for all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. And I can be found personally on all forms of social media @BobRuffTruth. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.